Coming up, the return of Flower Power. Well, in his documentary Back to the Garden, Flower Power comes full circle. Kevin Tomlinson explores the lives of a group of hippies living in Washington State. He first meets up with them in 1988, then finds almost 20 years later, he returns to find out just how their lifestyle has changed. Here's a little taste of the film.
Would I have called myself a hippie back in 88 or 89 or 86 or 76 or 66?
Highly involved people practicing inner evolvement.
The term has been so compromised and misunderstood and abused.
Looked at pictures in Life magazine of hippies, you know, and found that really appealing and knew that I didn't want the life my parents had.
Ended up living in a teepee in Oregon and connecting spiritually.
Here to talk about the film now is Kevin Tomlinson. He's the director behind Back to the Garden. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for joining us. How did you first come across this group of hippies?
I found them quite by accident. Back in 1988, I was a budding cameraman, and I was driving around on kind of a Jack Kerouac, Neil Cassidy road trip with a friend in the Okanagan of Washington State.
Right.
And I found a handwritten brochure advertising a healing gathering, and I thought, wow, what's this? And so I decided to go, and I recorded interviews, shot beautiful footage of communal tea kitchens and dancing and Reiki therapy and something strange called yoga back in those days. And lo and behold, I got some wonderful footage. The problem was I didn't know what to do with it in 1988. The footage and the people just seemed out of sync with Reaganomics and the attitude of me first. So it sat for almost 20 years in my basement through four moves, basically decomposing down there until I met someone who said, you know, we had to work on a project together. And by this time, I'm a full-time cameraman working in news.
Mm-hmm.
And I mentioned this footage I had, and she was like, oh, my God, you know, send me some of that stuff. Let's look at that. So in going through it and listening to those same comments about living simple lives, defending the earth, championing the simple and more sustainable lifestyles, I thought, you know, I think now is the time to try to find these people again. And I was very fortunate and was able to find them.
How many of them were you able to find?
I probably interviewed about 19, 20 people originally. I found seven people who I felt would be great characters for our film. I probably could have found more, but these were the key people I thought that would give us some variety in our film.
So tell me their stories. Tell me what you found them. Were there any? Well,
well, for that, you really have to see the film. I don't want to give too much
sure.
away. And by the way, if I can plug that really briefly, it's playing today at 6 o'clock for the last time
okay.
at VIFF and at the Granville 7 Cinemas. But their stories are what really make the interesting part of this. You know, have they changed? You mentioned in your introduction. Some have and some have not. I will say one thing. One of the group went to work for Microsoft. So that's kind of the most dramatic change. But a lot of the folks pretty much stuck to their guns.
I'm just trying to think of how out of place. I mean, as you said, in 1988, there really wasn't a place to put this. But how far we've come in that short time when it comes to things like sustainability. And is there a sense among those people, the people who have stuck with this, that the world is finally catching up to them?
Yeah, and I think they're kind of happy about that too. You know, they feel like in some ways that their philosophy has been vindicated. And because, you know, they've had a very, very hard go of it, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
The Back to the Land movement was not – it's not famous for being terribly successful sort of in the United States at least. Those who made it had to be incredibly disciplined and idealistic to get through the low – income, mm-hmm. Basically below American poverty standards level, living in very, very basic houses and in teepees and yurts. And it wasn't easy on relationships, let's just say that.
Were there any tremendous disappointments? Did anyone become an investment banker? Or
I really was looking for that, Stephen. I'm sorry to tell you, there were no insurance salesmen or used car salesmen in the lot. But there are some surprises.
When you did they talk about, of course, you couldn't include everyone that you originally interviewed in the film. Had they kept in touch with any of those people? Did they consider anyone's path a disappointment?
You mean among their own group?
Yeah.
No, I don't think so. They're very it's like a big tribal family, mm-hmm. quite frankly, even though this is not a commune we're talking about. This is a community of people who probably live within 100 miles of each other. They live on their own property, on their own land, with some exceptions. There is a land trust involved in here too. But no, I think they all approve pretty much. Even Deb Vester, who went to work for Microsoft, she has just recently made a big change in her life, which you'll have to see the film to find out what. But nobody's critical of any choices that their friends made, no.
Were you surprised personally when you went back and found so many people still living that life?
Yes, I was. Absolutely. I thought, well, they must have moved on to something else by now. And I was really kind of excited to see the irony in all of that. But let's just say these people, they hung out there for a reason. And I have a great deal of respect for what they've done, frankly. And I think, judging from the audience we had yesterday, which was almost a full house on a beautiful day like today, mm-hmm. They were so into the film and just oohing and aahing and laughing at all the right places. And, one of our characters uses the word syphilization, and hardly anybody gets that. But your Vancouver audiences, they're on top of things. So.
Did they have an impact on you?
They did. I live in Seattle with my wife, and I've been working as a cameraman freelance for about 25 years. And through the making of this film, I was making a lot of trips over to the Okanagan and fell in love with the area, of course, but also decided that, maybe we just don't need so much stuff. Maybe we can get by on a lot less and have more fulfilling lives. It's not all about going to the mall and keeping up with the Joneses. I know that sounds kind of trite, but basically we have a 400-square-foot cabin that we bought over there, a very 20-year-old cabin, mm-hmm. solar-powered, an outhouse, and I love it. It's just the solitude and the feeling of being back to nature is very powerful there.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, Kevin. We appreciate you coming in very much. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And 6 o'clock this evening at the Granville 6, the Empire Granville Theater is, I think, what it's – or Granville 7, Empire Granville Theater.
Empire Granville 7. And please come out and also check out our website. One last little plug, backtothegardenfilm.com.
Appreciate
and you'll
it.
Find out more about the film.
Thank you, Kevin. Kevin Tomlinson, the director of the film Back to the Garden, Flower Power Comes Full Circle. The film is screening tonight at the Vancouver International Film Festival. I'll say this one more time. Starts at 6 p.m., the Empire Granville Theater. We've got a pair of tickets to give away, by the way. Just be the first person to call in with the answer to this question. What Canadian singer-songwriter wrote the song Woodstock, which became a giant hit for Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young? Oh, come on, you know that. No, put your hand down, Kevin. 604-669-1443 is the number to call. 604-669-1443.